Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Driscoll, and I'm here on behalf of defendant appellant Treehouse Metropolitan District. May it please the court. The claim that has been asserted against the district by Ms. Pereira is that they failed to timely detect a leak in a residential water line. There is no claim in this case that the Treehouse had a duty to prevent the leak from occurring, or the Treehouse somehow caused the leak to occur. The issue before this court is whether or not Treehouse immunity has been waived under the operation and maintenance of a public water facility exception to immunity. As I alluded to earlier, we were before this court back in 2010. The trial court had denied the district's motion to dismiss on governmental immunity grounds. A panel of this court vacated that and remanded it back to the trial court to make additional factual findings and then apply those findings to the Treehouse rules and the Colorado Governmental Immunity Act. We believe that the trial court failed its mission and did not properly apply the factual findings to Treehouse rules and the Governmental Immunity Act. And so we are asking this court to reverse the trial court and conclude that such a matter of jurisdiction has not been established in this case. There are two primary questions that need to be answered to resolve this case. The first question is, what component of the water system leaked? And then the second question to be answered is, under Treehouse rules and the Immunity Act, who is responsible for that component? So addressing the first question, before the court is Exhibit F, which is actually in the appellate record, page 2150. And this is a schematic of the water system. Now, it's not to scale of the water system involved in this case, but it is representative of the water components that are involved in this case. You've got the 6-inch water main. You've got the corporation stop connecting a 1-inch copper line that goes down to a T connection, off of which 2 3/4-inch lines go to the property boundary and the curb stop box. And so even though this isn't to scale, this does represent the components that were involved in this case. Now, only two components are involved with where a leak may have occurred. And that's the T connection, which the court has before, and a 3/4-inch residential water line. The other components that are in that schematic were previously determined to have not been involved in the leak event.
Is the T connection itself treated as being part of the 1-inch line or part of the 3/4-inch line, or is it something else?
Well, we consider it as being part of the service line.
Okay, but help me out, English major here. You know, we're talking, if we had to put it with the 3/4-inch line or put it with the 1-inch line, is that a fair question? Can you say that it's part of one of those and not the other?
Well, I think the distinctions between a service line and a main line, and under the Treehouse rules, it refers to the 3/4-inch service line being affixed to a brass fitting. This is a brass fitting. And so to that extent, it's consistent with the definition of service line under the rules.
Well, how many customers does this serve?
It serves two lots.
So it serves more than one customer?
One line serves one customer, the other line serves another customer. In this case, only one line was determined to have leaked, a 3/4-inch line that went to the Ryan residence.
Okay, well, what do your rules say in terms of the definition of a service line as it applies to how many customers are serviced by the line?
The rules say that a single lot is service line, but the rules also provide for multiple family housing, like a duplex or a triplex, to be serviced by a service line.
And that's what this takes care of? This is that situation?
Well, the rules do not specifically identify a T connection in that. Okay. The rules are silent on that. It doesn't say if it's part of a main line or if it's part of a service line. It's our position that based on where this component falls within the overall system, that it should be consistent with the rules considered to be a service line. But it's also our position that this didn't leak, and what it is classified as is not determinative for the outcome of this case.
So the trial court, as I understand the facts or the evidence and the findings, there was a copper 3/4-inch service line that came into this, that there was on the flare of that height that there was corrosion, I guess, and as a result of that corrosion, then there was a leak at the fitting. Is that?
Yes, on the opposite side, you've got a piece of the 3/4-inch copper tubing that's actually sticking out.
And is this the one that?
No, sir, that goes to the.
To Ryan?
That goes to Curaful.
Oh, Curaful, okay.
That one went to Ryan. And the testimony at the trial court was is that there was about a 4 to 5 inch piece of pipe that was sticking out of the end, which is now missing some pipe. And what the trial court concluded based on the evidence from the testimony of Charles MacArthur is that the copper tubing, the 3/4-inch copper tubing, degraded and eroded, and that's what leaked. The trial court was very clear that there was no hole or defect or other matter of degradation with the T-joint itself.
Now, is all of this the T-joint, or do we have a T-joint and then a connector that is a part of the service line? This is the brass fitting, and then this brass fitting connects to the T-joint.
No, you've got the whole component there. The side where you still got a little bit of copper tubing, you know, you would have had similar tubing coming out of the other side of the.
I guess my question, and we have findings of fact that we'll have to work with, but my question is that if this were a T-joint, it was sitting there not connected, and the copper tubing now had to be installed, it would seem to me that this would be mounted on the top copper tubing, and then this would be mounted on the T-joint. You're saying this is an integral part of the T-joint?
That is the flare nut that is used to tighten down on the 3/4-inch copper tubing.
This is the flare nut?
Yes, sir.
And okay.
Just like the other side.
All right. I'm sorry. I'll be giving you a couple more minutes since we've taken you off course here.
Okay, thank you. So following that, the trial court had another hearing, and he took additional testimony, and he used some specific findings in his order. And I'd like to quote from that. Quote, the cause of the leak was the deterioration of the flare in the copper pipe servicing the Ryan property inside the T-connection and not a defect in the T-connection itself. Close quote, and that's at the record at page 1220. The trial court said, quote, that was the flare on the copper pipe servicing the Ryan residence which corroded and caused the flare fitting inside the T-joint to fail. Close quote, that's at the record of page 1223. The trial court found, this court has taken into account the fact that it was the copper pipe portion of the flare fitting which corroded. Close quote, that's at the record of page 1222. So the trial court has made clear that what leaked in this case is the 3/4-inch copper wire.
What failed was the copper.
The copper failed. It degraded. It failed both with inside the T-joint and also on the outside of the T-joint. Now, the trial court in its holding did not discuss the evidence that was brought at the hearing that is undisputed, that there was also a leak and a hole in the copper tubing on the outside of the T-joint. And at pages 18 to 21 of the opening brief, that testimony is detailed for you. In this panel held, the prior panel held that what lies in, between the curb stop and the T-joint, the 3/4 copper tubing, is a service line as a matter of law. So factual findings show that what is leaked in this case is the 3/4-inch copper tubing. And so based on the prior panel's holdings, as a matter of law, what leaked, the component that leaked, is a service line. Now, there were a couple of issues that the prior panel felt was not resolved, and one of those is whether or not there was a corporation stop at the junction of the one-inch line with the water main. And the undisputed evidence is that in fact there was a club election stop. And the prior panel held as a matter of law that the corporation stop, the curb stop at the property line, and the three-quarter inch copper tubing is all of a service line as a matter of law. Another question that was unresolved for the prior panel is whether or not the district has some sort of ownership or possessory interest in the area where the water apparatus lies on Ms. Perea's property, and the undisputed evidence is that it does not. There was a private driveway easement that was platted on the subdivision plat, and then there was a subsequent expansion of that easement through private transaction of the lot owners. And also before the court is I gave you a blown-up version of the subdivision plat map, and it shows the three lots, and on that it depicts the 12 and a half foot driveway easement on Ms. Perea's lot along the northern or the right side of the property as you're looking at it. And then there's also a driveway easement on the careful lot. And then the plat map reflects a 10-foot utility easement that's on the opposite side of where the water lines were at. And so the evidence in this case is that the water line was located in an area in which Treehouse did not have any sort of ownership or possessory interest. And that's one of the definitions of the main line in this case, is that it's a line that's either in a roadway or a dedicated easement to the district. And so,
Mr. Driscoll, are you now arguing that the one-inch line was a service line?
Well, it's like the T-joint, it didn't leak. We don't need to define it.
Okay.
But if I had to, I would say yes, because it lies between the corporation stop at the main line, which is part of the service line. It lies between the curb stop at the property boundary, which is part of the service
line. No, that's okay. If that's not your argument, then I'm going to just focus in on what is your argument.
And okay.
So, as I understand, the essence of your argument is that the three-quarter inch copper line is a service line, that service line degraded, and that is what leaked.
Correct.
And what the trial court decided was that the leak was in the T-joint. The T-joint is where the leak occurred.
That's where a portion of the three-quarter inch line degraded and leaked, correct.
Okay. And our remand was to tell us where the leak occurred.
Correct.
Okay.
And that occurred in the three-quarter inch copper water line. That's what leaked.
And what I am understanding the trial court to say is that it leaked in here.
A portion of the three-quarter inch line degraded, both within the T-joint and outside of the T-joint. But the fact is that it's, the trial court's findings are, is that it was a three-quarter inch line that degraded and leaked. There's nothing wrong with the T-joint. The T-joint didn't leak.
So then we come to the essential question then of how does this connect in with sovereign immunity and the waiver of sovereign immunity.
Correct.
Can you?
Yes.
And I'll give you more time after the time expires, but
thank you. There must be a finding that Treehouse both operated and maintained this three-quarter inch copper line. The Treehouse rules say that the service line is owned by the lot owner, and the lot owner has a responsibility for the repair and the maintenance of the service line.
Would you agree that this doesn't fall squarely within your definition of service line because it does serve two residences?
The three-quarter inch copper line that leaked falls squarely within the definition of a service line.
Okay, you were saying you could also argue that the one-inch line was a service line, and that, if I'm reading the diagram correctly, does serve more than one residence.
It does. But again, the line that leaked, what actually leaked here, falls squarely within the Treehouse Rules definition of service line. And, you know, the rules of statutory construction say that we're supposed to be a consistent, effective input to the district's rules. And it would be inconsistent to have a corporation stop at one end, a curb stop at the other end, a three-quarter inch copper line that is all part of the service line, and have a T-joint and a one-inch line that is all on private property somehow be something other than a service line.
Does that rule of construction top, if you will, the rule that says if there's ambiguity, in these principles, waivers are to be construed broadly in favor of the...
Well, the court's task is to apply statutory construction rules, not contract construction rules. But if the court were to apply contract construction rules, ambiguity would be inapplicable because Ms. Correa is a member of the board and she was one of the people that helped draft the regulations and enacted them. And so the case law cited in my brief specifies that any ambiguity in that circumstance will not be construed against 3Fs. So I've got about 10 seconds left, so I will address the court again after Ms. Correa.
And I will give you more time after you return.
Thank you, sir.
Counsel.
Hey, please, the court. My name is Andrew Rose, registration 9930. I represent Valerie Correa. I'm joined today by my partners, who are Graham Fuller, registration 40301, and Helen Stone, 2432. Let me quickly address some of the points that were made on opening argument. First, the only degradation that occurred in the water pipe outside of that T-joint was the result of the fact that it started inside and eroded its way outside due to the pressure. So that's a total red herring, number one. Number two, although the pipe degraded, the pipe did not leak, the joint leaked. The water came out of the joint. The water did not come out of the pipe. It doesn't matter what degraded. This court asked the trial court to make a determination on why the water leaked, where the water leaked. The court found that it occurred inside the T-joint. It was the T-joint that leaked. It doesn't matter that it was the copper pipe that deteriorated. That's irrelevant. Second, we know that the 1-inch line is not a service line because this panel that Judge Carpelli wrote the opinion in said it's not a service line. It can't be a service line. If it's not a service line, the corporation stop can't be a service line because it's not connected to the 3/4-inch line. In addition, after this court issued its opinion, the district went out and dug up the corporation stop and they replaced it of their own volition. If that was a service line, they had no legal right to do that. That's the entire problem with this entire case.
Mr. Rosen, just for your purposes and analysis, what we did say in the first opinion was that that record at that time was not sufficient to conclude that that was a service line. And so you can continue.
Okay. Second thing is, they didn't have to operate and maintain the T-joint. They had to operate and maintain a water facility. And the analogy that I would use is as follows. Let's assume that you had a water district which had meters. The meters were located on the houses. They send a driver out to read the meter, and in the process, he runs over the mailbox. They don't own the mailbox, but as part and parcel of their maintenance and operation of the water facility, they caused an injury. They ran over a mailbox. That makes them sovereign immunity waived. That's really what it boils down to. So
is your case based on a negligent operation and maintenance, or is it based on a negligent inspection?
No, it's based on a negligent operation and maintenance because one of the things that they had to do to operate and maintain this water district was to detect leaks no matter where they occurred. Why? Because it was an unmetered water district. So any leak that occurred, no matter where it was, would affect everybody because everybody paid equally. So if it leaks in one place, even if it's technically leaking in somebody's house, it's going to affect the entire district and everybody's going to have to pay for that additional water.
Now that would be a policy consideration. Is there some law that, some case or some statute or some regulation that would tell us that?
That's what they did. Every time there was a water leak in this district, no matter whether it was on somebody's property or in the street, you called a representative of the district. They sent somebody out to investigate. They didn't call the homeowner and say, you know, this is on your private property. Maybe it's your service line. Maybe you need to go out and find out whether there's a leak in your water service line or not. In this case...
But our statute does say, does it not, that undertaking something for which they had no duty does not create a duty?
That's correct, but they did have a duty in this case because it's an unmetered water district, and so that a leak affects everybody.
So it's a common law duty, you're saying?
I think it falls within the statute. It's part of their operation and maintenance of a water system. It's not an inspection. It's not like the fire department goes to a house or goes to a business to make sure that they have fire extinguishers. But if in fact a fire department was called and said, I think there's a propane leak or a natural gas leak, and they go out and they fail to detect it and it blows up and it blows up the entire neighborhood, that's not the inspection they're talking about. They're talking about, and that's what we have here.
So here we had a report of a suspected leak, and they came and they
twice.
Came and they came out and they looked, they tried to detect a leak, and they did not.
They didn't. Actually, twice. The first time they blew my client off. My client did it at a board meeting, and by the way, there's nothing in the record to show that my client had anything whatsoever to do with these drafting of these rules and regulations. Yes, she was on the board at the time of this, but there's absolutely nothing in the record to establish that. But again, the bottom line being that the fact is that she goes to the meeting, she tells them, I think there's a water leak, they blow her off. She then has the landslide. She goes back to the water district and says, there's a water leak. They say, well, we'll check into it. They come out, they mess it up entirely. They don't put a key on the curb stop to hear whether water's running, and the leak causes further damage. So there's really two occurrences that occurred in this case, not just one. But the important thing, in no time did the board or the district ever act like this was a service line. Ever. From the beginning to the end. As a matter of fact, as Mr. Driscoll represented, the pipe was in, and so they had no way of knowing what caused or what was deteriorated until we went 4 years later to a hearing. And at that point in time, Mr. McDonald takes a look at it and he goes, oh, guess what? I'm looking at it and now I can see where, yeah, in fact it did it. They didn't even ask. They never tried to determine whether it was the flare of the copper pipes that had deteriorated or it was the brass that had deteriorated. They've never acted that way. So what is their argument here? They want to argue that they have no duty, that it's not their part, even though it's not a service line. We know that T-Joint's not a service line. Judge Roman, you're correct, because it services more than one party, so it can't be a service line. They draft a series of rules and regulations which don't account for this type of situation at all, so that needs to get construed against them. They go out and they, when they're told there's a leak, do they go and call the homeowner and say, we think there's a leak? No, they go out and they send out their own representative. After they discover the leak, do they go to the people, which by the rules and regulations require them to, do they go to the homeowner and say, guess what, it's your service line that's leaking, you need to get out there and fix it? They never do that. Then, the interesting thing is, what did they replace? Did they replace the copper tubing? Did they replace the service line? No. How did they repair? They replaced the T-joint, which services more than one property. Then, they bill two homeowners for that T-joint.
Why does it matter who they build? I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, it's not our financial responsibility, but your issue, it seems to me, is they failed to detect. And so if your position is that they went out, they were negligent in their failure to detect, why would it matter who ends up paying?
Doesn't, and that's our fallback position. Even assuming that it was that the T-joint belonged to the homeowners, and even assuming that the service line is what leaked, Their duty that we're suing them for is not their failure to maintain the T-joint or the pipe. Our claim is that they failed to detect the leak, which was what was part of their operation and maintenance of their water facility.
So under that theory or hypothetical, it doesn't matter where the leak was.
Doesn't matter.
However, what are we going to do with the remand from the previous division that says go back and tell us where the leak occurred?
Now that you know where the leak occurred, you can say, you can stop there and simply say the leak occurred inside the T-joint, we're done. You can say, okay, you found out it was inside the T-joint, but because it was the copper pipe, we're going to say it was the service line. But in the opinion, the last part of the opinion, Judge Carparelli said they tried to dismiss our claim basically because we were arguing, they claimed that we were arguing that we failed to maintain the pipe. And since it's not their pipe, it's not their problem. And we tried to get a rehearing. The court didn't grant our rehearing, but that's not binding law. It's like the Supreme Court denied certiorari. It doesn't mean anything. It just said, let's wait and see. So we go back to the trial court. The trial court then makes the finding where the leak occurred and then takes it even further. He says it occurred inside the T-joint. Even if it was the water pipe, not the T-joint that leaked, everything they've done here, they treated it like it was theirs. So under their own rules and regulations, and interpreting the contract, and by the way, you do interpret the contract, because the case that you sat on the panel with Judge Davidson actually interpreted the rules and regulations and talked about ambiguity, in addition to talking about, and that's the case that's cited, and that's the exhibit, and the reason why I introduced the exhibit was because the difference between that case and this case was, in that case, the question was, where did the leak occur? And the leak didn't occur inside the water meter, which was the responsibility of the district. It occurred in the copper horn, and that's why, which was around, the word in the decision was around the water meter, and therefore, that's what leaked, not the water meter. In this case, what leaked, though, was the T-joint. The T-joint serviced two people. It cannot be a service line, just like the one-inch line can't be a service line, just like the corporation stop in this case cannot be a service line. If, in fact, they built the water lines as they had drafted and used their rules and regulations, each line would have gone to the main. There would have been two single three-quarter inch lines that would have hit a corporation stop at the main, and then they could argue that everything belongs to the homeowner, but that still avoids the fact that that's not our claim in this case. Our claim in this case is that they failed to do their job of maintaining and operating their water system, which included the duty to detect a water leak.
So let me make sure I understand. In that last decision, we did say that we perceived that your claim was a failure to detect rather than a failure to prevent or a causation. Do you disagree with that?
No, that's absolutely what we argued. Okay. We continue to argue. As a matter of fact, if our claim was, just as a sidelight, if in fact our claim was failure to maintain, we probably would lose on sovereign immunity anyway, because what the problem was that the type of fitting, this flare fitting, had become outdated, and they have no duty to upgrade. But that's not what our case is here.
So I just wanted to make sure that it is your position that it was a duty to detect and a failure to detect.
Okay, absolutely, it's a duty to detect, and that's total, and we have two failures and two occurrences, the first landslide and the second landslide. So I think if you take the rule of statutory construction, which says narrowly construe sovereign immunity, and you take the rule of contract construction that says all ambiguities have to be construed against the maker, I don't see why we're here. Because all the evidence we now have indicates everything to support, whether it be on the basis that it was the joint of me, whether it was the fact that they treated it as their property, or whether it doesn't matter whether it was their property or not, under any of those three circumstances, you would have to find in favor of the plaintiff, affirm the trial court, remand the case so we can eventually get to trial after 4.5 years. I kind of equate this to a hurdle race. What started out as a 100-meter hurdle race has turned into a 400-meter endurance hurdle race. We are now 4.5 years down the road. My client's entitled to justice. She brought a claim based upon everything that they did in this case. They acted as though it was their problem. She pursued it under those circumstances, and if you were to reverse on this basis, I can't think of anything more unjust, because not only will she lose her claim, but she's going to be subject to their attorney's fees for this 4.5-year fight, which they didn't even determine why the water leak occurred until 4.5 years and a second Trinity hearing and after an appeal as to why the leak occurred. That's not fair. My client's entitled to an affirmance of the trial court on any or all of the three grounds. We need to get back to the trial court. We need to get this case resolved. My client deserves justice. Thank you.
Bailiff, would you give Mr. Driscoll an extra 2 minutes?
Yes.
Why the leak occurred is irrelevant. Where the leak occurred, the component in which the leak occurred, is what an issue before the court. Why the leak occurred pertains to causation, and this court and Ms. Bria has already said that causation of the leak is not an issue in this case. Now, the prior panel made certain findings as a matter of law, and that is the law of the case. And Ms. Puri has not come up with any changed circumstances of law to indicate that this panel should deviate from the prior panel's findings.
I'm aware in principle, but have you ever heard that applied to a denial of a petition for rehearing as somehow becoming the law of the case? You know, I thought it was like a denial of a cert petition. It means nothing.
The law of the case is this panel's findings that it made in the vacating the trial court and remanding it back to the trial court.
Indeed, but your argument in your reply brief suggests that because rehearing wasn't granted to recast the remand order, that decision somehow constrains our ability to look at the same issue this go round. Did I misread your reply?
That was not my intent. My intent was is that the prior panel's findings that it made in when it vacated and remanded the case back to the trial court is the law of the case, in that there are no changed circumstances or law that would justify deviation from those prior findings. What I meant to indicate in referring to the request for reconsideration that was filed in conjunction with the first appeal is he made the same argument at that he's making now, is that it doesn't matter where in the district or what component leaks, that the treehouse is responsible for that, regardless of where it is. And that's contrary to both the rules and the laws of the main duty. And so I apologize if that point wasn't clear. The record does reflect that Ms. Turia was on the board when these rules were adopted and made effective, and that's cited in my brief. And so they used things like public water facility as a term of art, and they use it loosely, but it means that you have to both operate and maintain. And the treehouse rules say that we do not maintain that line because we do not own it, we do not repair it, and we do not maintain it.
You do that service line, the 3/4-inch line.
And then also under operation, the definition of operation specifically exempts the duty to inspect, to find a leak, unless you own or lease, or own or lease the apparatus, and we didn't either. And they, basically what their argument is it's a course of conduct that because we handle things in a certain way in the past, that's binding on us now. Well, Kelsey and the other cases, the Mesa Valley School District versus Kelsey, holds that you cannot confer subject matter jurisdiction based on waiver or estoppel, and that's essentially what they're arguing. And they provide you with no legal authority to indicate that that's been changed. So we believe that the trial court did not follow the prior panel's direction in that there is no subject matter jurisdiction in this case and that Treehouse should be dismissed.
Mr. Driscoll, as I'm understanding Perea's argument, it is that your client operates a water facility. As an operator of that water facility, you have the duty to operate and maintain it. That includes that when you go out and detect leaks, that you must do that non-negligently, and that here we're all getting sovereign immunity. We're not dealing yet with the merits of the case, but that this is an action in which she is suing on the basis of a negligent operation of a water facility that has caused her damage. And the negligent operation is the failure to detect a leak. What is, regardless of service line or et cetera, or maybe not, I mean, if your argument is this, what's wrong with their argument that says you operate a water facility, you have a duty to respond to reports of leaks on the water facility, you can't know where the leak is before you go out and look for it, and that when you do look for it, you have to be competent, not negligent, let's say. But what's your response to that?
Well, again, public water facility is a term of art specifically defined by the Governmental Immunity Act, and it says that you have to both operate and maintain the water apparatus at issue. And it's our position that we did not both operate and maintain the water apparatus at issue in this case. Treehouse rules as well as statutory law give the district authority to delineate responsibility for different parts of the water system, and that's what they did. And they said that a 3/4-inch line that services a single-family residence that has a curb stop at one end, a corporation stop at the other end, is a service line. And this court held, agreed with the rules on that as a matter of law the first go-round. And so, under the rules, we don't maintain that 3/4-inch line because we don't own it, and we don't have the obligation to repair or maintain it because that is specified directly in the Treehouse rules. As to operation, that gets back to you only have a duty to inspect in a non-negligent manner if it's something that you own or lease. And you do not own or lease the 3/4-inch line that leaked.
And so then the trial court here is distinguishing that, and the trial court is saying, regardless of where the corrosion or failure or what piece corroded or failed, the leak was within the T-joint. And so your position is, the judge's conclusion is, the T-joint is yours, and that's where the leak occurred, and you operate and maintain that. And your argument is, the copper line is where the leak occurred, and you don't operate and maintain that.
That's correct. Because the copper line leaked both within and outside of the T-joint. I mean, the judge completely ignored the evidence in his opinion that a portion of the line between the curb stop-ups and the T leaked. It doesn't matter whether or not it was a result of corrosion from inside. That goes to causation of what causes the corrode, and that's not an issue here. The 3/4-inch line leaked.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, thanks for your arguments. As you can tell, we are engaged in the analysis of this and working hard to understand your arguments and the record. We're going to leave these here. I'm going to leave these here for you to return with. The case now stands submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course.